This is the Medicast, January 14th, 2007.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to, here it is, episode 100 of the Medicast. And while I am happy to be at episode 100, I'm going to wait to hold the big celebration for a couple more weeks until the first week in February. The very first episode in February will be our grand second anniversary show. And I'm looking forward to having some things to give away to listeners by way of the Medicast newsletter. So if you aren't subscribed to the newsletter, you want to get over to the site and subscribe soon so that you can be in the running for some of the stuff I'll be giving away. I'm looking forward to getting a few items in, I hope, from Alliance Medical. Our friend Dan White over there at allmed.net is going to be hopefully sending me a few things our way, and I'll have them here to give away to some of the listeners. So if you haven't signed up for the Medicast newsletter, which gets you all the show notes, links, and everything emailed to you every week, as well as other information that I think might be important to know about for the show, all of that comes to you directly by email, and you can sign up over at the Medicast site at medicast.com, and you will see over there in the upper right-hand corner of the blog page a link to click on to sign up for the newsletter. Go ahead and do that in that right-hand column, and you'll get all squared away for the contest coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm very excited, and I'm just happy that you guys have shared the journey with me here. It's been a great time getting to this point, and I hope to have many other anniversaries in years to come. But in the meantime, we're here on episode 100, big old 100, and it's time to look a little bit at some of the listener mail, some of the comments you all have had over the last week or so following our great Medicast Live episode last time. I'll lead off with an email I got from listener Tom. Tom sent in an email to me requesting some information regarding the patient refusal episode that we did on the Medicast Live back in December. And if you haven't listened to that episode, I urge you to go back and check it out. We had a lot of great information regarding patient refusals and a good discussion between the different guests on the show. And Tom wanted to know if I had any links to some of the articles I referred to during that show. And I guess, Tom, first of all, I know I've already talked with you, and hopefully you've gotten the information you needed, but this is a great opportunity to point out to the rest of the listeners that you can always search the Medicast site and find links to anything I've covered in past episodes. There's a couple of different ways you can do that. The easiest way is probably to just go right there on the search box, which is in the left-hand column of the site near the top, or you know, as you're scrolling down, you'll find it very quickly. It's one of the first things you come to below the subscriptions. And in that search box, you can either search the web directly using Google, or you can use Google to search the Medicast site. So if you want to know if I've covered a particular disease or a particular medication before on the show or on the website, maybe I've mentioned it in an article but not in a podcast, you can go ahead and search there, and it'll bring up anything that you're looking for that I've covered. And just click the little button to search the site, and you go to town. Search for whatever you want to. I always try to include links to everything I talk about, and I try to make sure that those links are either directly back to the article I'm referring to, or hopefully, if I'm talking about a tip of the week or a med of the week, to some definitive, what I believe to be an authoritative resource for you to use, at least for general medical knowledge information. So you can use that, and hopefully that will help some of the others of you out, at least to help find out the links I'm using for the show. I also got an email from listener Eddie, who was one of the guys tuned in live on Tuesday night for the Medicast Live this past week. And in that episode, if you haven't already listened to it, we talk about what we're looking forward to in 2008, some predictions, some things that myself or my panelists were looking forward to. We had a great group of panelists, Dan White from AllMed, Alliance Medical, and also Rick Rosati from the Mitigation Journal. We had Kenny Schneider from Colorado and also Chris Black all on there, plus some topics and discussion from other listeners that were checking in either via chat or via the phone. So it was great to have all of you on. And Eddie, guess what? You were one of the listeners who emailed in the secret code word to get your T-shirt, and you have been chosen from among those listeners to be the winner of that T-shirt. So, Eddie, I want to congratulate you. If you want to get back to me, I will send you an email here shortly, and you'll want to make sure that you get back to me with your shirt size and your mailing address so I can get that off to you right away. I also got an email from Chris Black, and Chris sent me an email specifically this time to talk about the Philadelphia incident I discussed last week in the regular Medicast episode, where we talked about the woman who died 2 hours after she'd called 911, after they were so busy running around New Year's Eve that in the city of Philadelphia that they couldn't get an ambulance to her promptly enough. They did dispatch an engine crew, and that crew ran out of oxygen while treating her respiratory distress with a BLS crew, and the ambulance that first arrived broke down and was unable to transport her, and by the time the second ambulance got there, she had passed away. Chris wanted to point out that this is something that's happened to him twice and is a problem related more to some difficulties with mechanical problems. And he's had an ambulance catch fire on him and other things. And I'm wondering how frequent an occurrence this is. How old is the ambulance fleet in most of the areas out there? So if you've had something like this happen, I'd be really interested in hearing about it. I'd like to know what's been the response, how careful is your company on maintaining the maintenance levels of your units? And do you think that this is a problem that you worry about when you're transporting a critical patient? I'd be interested to hear back. Chris, thanks for that email, and look forward to hearing from some of the others of you about this topic as well. The final email I'll talk about today comes in from listener Jay, who I think comes out of Texas. He's an EMTB in the process of testing to become a paramedic, and he wanted to know if I had any suggestions for him on passing the National Registry Test. He's already taken it twice, come very close, and still has not passed. And he wanted to know if I had any advice for him, and what did I think he might be doing wrong. Well, I'll tell you, first of all, Jay, I think that you're not doing anything wrong. It is not an easy test for everybody to take, and it is tricky in many ways. You have to pass certain sections with a certain score, and you have to pass the test as a whole with a certain score. So it is actually physically possible to pass the whole test but fail because you did poorly on one or two sections. And so you have to kind of keep that in the back of your mind. So for Jay and for those of you out there, I'll do a quick review of what I think you need to do in situations like this. First of all, there's no shame in taking the National Registry Test more than once. Don't beat yourself up about it. You want to just dig back in, do what you've done to succeed in your class so far, and get back into study mode. The good news is when you get your written test results, you should be getting an idea of what section you need to bone up on. How did you do? Now, you're going to have to take the whole test again, of course, but and you run the risk of doing well in that section and doing poorly in another section, but you at least want to spend more time studying the section you had difficulty with. And then also make sure you go back and review your other sections so that your knowledge stays fresh in the other areas that you're testing. And then you're going to go back and take your test. I know, based upon my understanding, you can take the test up to 3 times, and then you have to go back for some remediation, some review with an instructor. You come back with that remediation information, and then you can take the test 3 more times. That's my understanding. You can take it a total of 6 times. If you don't pass until you get the 6th time, you're still a paramedic. And how well you do on a test is not an indication of how well you do in a back of an ambulance. You could be great with patients. You could be great with your assessment skills. You just don't test well. And if that's the case, then Jay, you just need to keep plugging along and do what you need to do. The other suggestion I have for everybody, whether you're in the middle of taking the test and you're not having success, or you're preparing to take the test sometime in the near future, you need to get a hold of some National Registry test practice questions. They come in books. You can get them with like 200, 500 questions. I went out and bought 3 different books, and I went through and took every single question in every one of those books. I took the questions, I read the answers, I checked my answers, and I tried to understand how they arrived at the answer that they did. A couple of the books actually had rationales included, so that helped, but you need to start learning to think like a National Registry question. It's not always intuitive. They're trying not to trick you, but they're trying to help you notice fine differences between 2 answers. There are 2 answers that are going to be easy to throw out if you know your course material, and there are going to be probably 2 answers there that are sort of right. One of them is going to be the best answer, and the other one's going to be an okay answer. Of course, you need to choose the best answer. And so once you've taken a bunch of these test questions and you've gone through and you've taken them again and again and you've looked at them and you understand and internalize them, you may find that a question very similar to one you've already done pops up on the test. And so this was my experience. I think took about 1,500 test questions over the final couple of months of my program. And what I found was, when I was going through the test, was every now and then I'd just get to a question and go, oh, well, I've seen that one before. And maybe not exact wording, but certainly something very similar with a similar answer profile. And so that's the advantage of that. And I think any kind of standardized test, whether it's your nursing boards, whether it's your National Registry test for EMT or paramedic, or any of these types of medical testing situations, the people who succeed the easiest or the most frequently are the ones that are doing these practice tests up front. And I think that some studies have looked at them. People who do 500 to 1,000 test questions prior to a test tend to do better than those who don't do any test questions at all. So that kind of gives you an indication, Jay, and I hope that helps. I tell you what, I put in the show notes a link to a couple of the testing books over at Amazon, because I can link over to them through my affiliate store service. So, of course, complete disclosure, that means that this is a store link. You're not required to buy, but if you purchase through that, it does pay back to the Medicast. So just so you understand how that process works, I want to make sure everybody's squared away. When you see a link like that, it will be a link to the Medicast store, affiliated store with the Amazon store. But I will have those links up there for you in the show notes so that you have some information you can go through and look at. We'll move right on into this week's link of the week. And this is a link, again, to another one of my sites. As if I'm not busy enough with everything else I have going on, I decided to go ahead and kick off a new podcast. And that podcast is called The Nursing Show. Many of you know I'm a nursing student. I'll be graduating in just a few months. And I wanted to kind of put something up there for other nursing students and nurses as we review information and get ready to get the testing process finished. If you know of any nurses or nursing students, or you're a nursing student, you can go ahead and check out the show over at nursingshow.com. And you'll also find that in the iTunes directory and many other directories around the internet if you'd like to subscribe to the show. So spread the word to people you know. Let everybody know that the Nursing Show is out there, and tell them how much you like the Medicast, because I'm really striving to make the Nursing Show a show for nurses like the Medicast is for EMTs and paramedics. And of course, I'm not going to be skimping here at the Medicast, but I felt that I can certainly take some of the information that I've learned and put it out there for nurses as well. Let's move on into this week's news. And there's quite a few stories here, but I want to jump in and look at a couple of them in greater detail than I normally do. The first story, I actually have 2 links in the show notes for, and I'll talk a little bit about both those articles, but you should probably head over and check this story out for yourself. It has to do with a Texas woman who was left for dead in the wreckage of a motor vehicle accident with a tarp over her body after a paramedic said she was dead and moved on to other patients. No one else checked the woman, and when a medical examiner came to remove the body, discovered that she was breathing and called for rescue equipment to come to the scene and begin to extricate her. However, she died the next day. She had suffered a severe head injury, and that the paramedic involved judged her to be dead by looking at her, not by doing any kind of assessment. The chief of EMS, or the fire chief in San Antonio, is saying that checking pulse and vital signs is part of protocol, and it's part of protocol for a reason. So this is a sad situation, and it's something I've talked about before. We need to really be double-checking on this. You shouldn't be pronouncing anyone dead till you've listened to their chest with a stethoscope carefully, as quiet in as quiet an environment as possible for a minute. Okay? You should be assessing these patients, and despite how they look, despite what kind of mangling trauma they've experienced or what else has happened to them, you need to assume they're alive until you can prove definitively otherwise. If you're a BLS provider, that involves listening to them with a stethoscope, listening for a full minute for breath sounds, for a full minute for heart sounds. Listen for a pulse over their heart. You should be able to hear a heart beating, and if you do, then this patient is not dead yet. You follow your protocol for an unconscious subject. You know, you keep going. If you're a paramedic, you should be hooking this patient up to an EKG, making sure they're asystolic, or if they're in pulseless arrhythmia, and you are and your protocols allow you to pronounce them based on what that presentation is, then you can go ahead and pronounce them. But you want to do a full check. Okay, it's just there's no excuses for skipping things here. Okay, now I'm not sure if this was an initial scenes assessment and this was a triage situation. That's different. When you're triaging patients, you go through and you look at them in a different way. When you triage patients, this patient is a dead patient. You're going to try to open their airway and you're going to move on. But if after the fact, that patient wasn't followed up on properly, that's different. So, you know, there are instances where that could happen this way, but it sounds, according to what I've read on this article, that this person seemed to just skip the necessary steps. There's a reason we have protocols, folks. It's not just to give us extra work to do. It actually is there to save our butts. And unfortunately, this paramedic is looking at a long road ahead of them legally to back up the actions in the field. The second story that has to do with the union that the paramedic belongs to is backing that paramedic in the death of this woman, basically saying that he acted according to his training when he moved on to help other victims in a motor vehicle accident without checking the woman's vital signs because she appeared to be dead. And again, this comes back to the specifics of the situation. If this was a situation where he was the initial provider on the scene and he provided an initial assessment and then moved on to triage other patients and became involved in treating other patients and follow-up care did not come in and check behind them, then that is more of an issue with incident command not assigning appropriate follow-up care to any patient and assuming that other things happened. This is going to come back and really come down to what was the protocol for this facility or for this agency, and did he follow procedures that were in place. You know, that's how you're going to back yourself up in situations like this. Did you do things according to your training, and did you do things according to your company or your agency's normal policies? And if for any reason you didn't, you better have a good reason to back yourself up. You know, now if you did it because you wanted patient care to be a certain way, I would get medical control online and have them follow up in other situations. But in a situation of pronouncing someone at the scene, you need to go through and make sure you dot all your I's and cross all your T's. And if you did pronounce somebody and you move on to triage someone else, I would If you can't get back to that patient again because you did a rapid assessment and you moved on, I would point out to another provider to go check them. You know, I would point out to incident command that someone else needs to follow up on your initial assessment. And so this is an unfortunate situation, and it is likely, we don't know, but it is likely if she was that severely injured, she may not have survived anyway, but she may have had organs that were viable that, because of the prolonged condition, were not viable. We could have, there's never know. You just never know. There are so many miracle saves now in trauma medicine and surgery that we will never know. And so you can avoid this problem yourself and the legal issues that this paramedic is facing by double checking. Don't write anyone off until you've made sure that they are indeed dead. And I'm going to leave it at that, and we'll move on to another news item. Okay, let's move on to some happier news. I will move to Connecticut, where a group of paramedics and some other rescuers, including a police officer and a couple of firefighters, assisted in the delivery of early morning twins to a woman who called to say she was giving childbirth and needed assistance, called 911. By the time they got there, she had already started to deliver one of the babies, and it was actually engaged and hanging in her stretch pants. So she had still had her pants on, and the baby was being held up by that. So they promptly got her laid down and got the baby delivered. And then she was having twins, so they went ahead and ended up delivering another child. And this is a nice story and reminds all of us that whenever you have patients that are pregnant and in imminent delivery, you need to remember you're going to have two patients pretty darn quickly. You know, you're going to have the mother to deal with, and you're going to have two other patients. And that's something that came out in this article over at emsresponder.com, was that this paramedic made the comment that we had three patients in this situation, and so they needed additional assistance. They ended up having 10 rescuers total on the scene to deal with two babies who were about 4 weeks premature and the mother herself who had been carrying twins. And so they seemed to be doing fine. They were in intensive care at the time of the writing of this article for observation, and mother seemed to be doing fine as well. But it is important for us to remember that this can happen to any of us at any time, and to remember to call for additional resources, because you want to make sure you have enough responders and enough providers on the scene to take care of the medical issues that may present when you have multiple patients. And childbirth by its very nature is a multi-patient situation. The final story I'm going to look at in the news today has to do with the cold and flu season, but not in the way you'd normally think. This has to do with the fact that a recent survey is showing that millions of children are getting high using over-the-counter cold medications. These cold medications cause different things like disorientation, blurred vision, slurred speech, and vomiting. Gee, I can't wait to go vomit with my friends. But this is a problem because the cough suppressant found in these over-the-counter medications, when taken in a high enough dose, causes these other side effects. And among persons aged 12 to 25 over the past year, there was approximately 3.1 million people, according to the survey estimates, that have used cough and cold medicines to get high just in the previous year. That is a scary number, folks, and it's something for us to all keep track of. It's also important to note that these people are also likely to have used other illicit drugs, including marijuana and alcohol, and maybe inhalants or other hallucinogens like LSD or ecstasy. So if someone's doing this to get high, it's likely that they have used or are using other illegal medications or illegal drugs. So again, when you have something like this crop up, you know, you might want to, you know, if you have a patient presenting, a young kid presenting oddly in the home, in their behavioral issue, or they're sick and the parents call because they don't know what's going on, you know, ask the parents, hey, do you have any cough medicine in the house? Is it supposed to be full or is it supposed to be empty? You know, you might need to ask that question. You also might need to ask the patient when you get them in the back of the ambulance, you know, when you get them alone, you know, hey, your parents aren't here. Did you take anything? These are all things you need to keep in the back of your mind. And you know, it's hard for me. I have kids that, you know, are in their early teens, and it's always shocking when I read stories like this, and they end up rolling their eyes the next time we sit around the dinner table together, because I end up really quizzing them on stuff like this. Do they see it at school? Do they know of somebody who's done something like this? We make jokes about how boneheaded people are when they do stupid things like this. I hope to impress upon them how destructive this type of behavior is, and how ridiculous people are when they do something like this to themselves. And believe me, I will point out how stupid it is that they're going to end up throwing up if this is one of the side effects. Gee, just what I wanted to do to get high. Anyway, just wanted to point that out to you. Check out the link in the show notes on this story. But it goes back to, again, like I talk about quite a bit, getting a good history. Okay, getting that following, trying to be the detective, get to the bottom of the story. What's going on behind the scenes? And I think talking about history kind of points around to this week's tip and trick of the week. And so this week I'll return to some BLS skills, because I know I've got a lot of BLS listeners out there. So for all of you EMTBs or EMTB students, here you go. I'm going to cover one of the skill stations from the National Registry Skill Sheets checklist. You can always go to the show notes and you'll click a link that'll take you directly to the page where you can download some of those checklists yourself. Now, for BLS skills, this is something that is often tested at the state level. National Registry allows individual states, jurisdictions, and institutions like colleges to go ahead and institute their own skills checking system. They just have some required stations that have to occur as part of the testing process when you test out at the state or local level. So they may use slightly different check sheets than the National Registry check sheets, but they will be something very similar and at least give you something to practice from. You can create your own scenarios and test your friends and your colleagues in class over the same skill sheets, and you should be pretty much prepared for what you run into. So I'm going to look at the medical assessment scenario from the National Registry BLS skill set. And this will give you an indication of what you might expect there. But patient history is a big portion of that. So let's go through and look a little bit at the skill station for National Registry Medical Assessment. This station is another one of the stations where you really need to follow a methodical top-to-bottom process in your assessment approach. You want to remember two things here: a good sample history and OPQRST, onset, provokes, quality, radiates, severity, and time when assessing any painful sign or symptom, as well as finding out what interventions the patient used to treat that prior to your arrival. So let's jump on in to the process for the patient assessment of a medical patient skill station. Start off with scene safety, BSI. You need to verbalize or take body substance isolation and determine if the scene is safe. You want to determine the mechanism of injury or nature of illness and determine the number of patients you have, followed by the request for additional help if you think you're going to need it. This may include requesting ALS assistance in patients that may need ALS intervention. You're also going to consider whether you need to stabilize C-spine. This is part of your normal scene size up. You'll then move into the initial assessment. You want to verbalize your general impression of the patient. Ask the preceptor, what do they look like? Determine responsiveness and level of consciousness. Determine what the chief complaint is, and also look for any apparent life threats. Assess airway and breathing. Assess whether they have any major bleeding, and assess for pulse and skin color, temperature, and condition. You now want to identify priority of patient and make a transport decision. Are you going to stay and play, or do you need to load and go? You'll now follow up with a focused history and a physical exam, perhaps a rapid assessment in a more critical patient. Remember that some patients will have certain aspects of their assessment that are different when compared to others, depending on the chief complaint determined above. but all patients will have the following steps assessed. You will start out by assessing any signs or symptoms, assessing the history of the present illness. You will include an OPQRST assessment of the patient's pain and any sudden onset items, like shortness of breath. You will move on and assess for allergies, find out the patient's medications, ask about any past pertinent medical history, when they had last oral intake, and events leading up to the present illness, ruling out trauma. You will perform a focused physical examination of the patient, assessing the affected body part or system, or perhaps complete a rapid assessment of the patient. You will obtain baseline vital signs and move on to performing any interventions that may be necessary. This will include properly obtaining medical direction or verbalizing that a medication is a standing order med, and you will verbalize proper additional intervention and treatment. This may include proper administration of the medication as necessary. After completing your focused history and physical assessment or rapid assessment, as well as any indicated interventions, you'll want to reevaluate your transport decision and decide to initiate transport sooner as necessary. You'll also want to verbalize that you are considering completing a complete head-to-toe detailed physical exam as well. You will then verbalize that you are going to continue ongoing assessment during transport, including repeating your initial assessment, repeat vital signs, and repeating your focused assessment regarding patient complaint or injuries. You also want to state exactly how often you would do this based on the priority of the patient. You are now finished the medical patient assessment. There are some critical criteria that you want to make sure you pay attention to while doing this assessment. If you failed to take scene safety or BSI precautions, if you did not obtain medical direction or verbalize your standing order for any medical interventions, if you failed at any point to provide appropriate high-flow O2 to the patient, if you did not find or manage problems associated with airway, breathing, hemorrhage, or shock, if you did not differentiate the patient's need for rapid transport versus continued assessment at the scene, if you did your detailed or focused history and physical exam before you completed your initial assessment, the airway, breathing, and circulation assessment, and if you did not ask questions about the present illness, and if you did any administration of a dangerous or completely inappropriate intervention. These would all be critical fail points.
It's also important to note that there's only a few things you're likely to run into in this skill station. So don't get too bound up about it. You can take a deep breath, let yourself off easy by just relaxing before you even get started, and then go ahead and methodically work through the patient problem. Again, you're looking at only a few limited things. You're looking at just look at your list of drugs and know what they treat. Those are the things you're going to run into as most likely things to run into in your skill station. They're not going to throw an ALS problem at you. They're going to be giving you things where you would be administering nitro, be administering an EpiPen, an albuterol, those type of things, okay? Oral glucose. Go down the list of the things you normally do as a medical skill that you've learned in your class, and that's going to be the type of thing you're going to run into. So that's the tip and trick of the week this week, and it is something you may have noticed a portion of it sounds a little different. That's because I recorded that segment earlier in process for another project I'm working on, and it should be coming out very soon. But if you're in EMTB training right now and you're looking for something to help you get ready for your skill stations, I am getting ready to release a series of audio files that, you know, it's all jumbled together, everything ready to go, so that you can go right down the skill stations and learn them and practice them while you're driving along, while you're listening, while you're working out at the gym, whatever. It'll help you get that taken care of. And that's going to be available soon over at the Medicast store. So that's just a little teaser of some of the information you're likely to find in that package. And I'll have more on that in a couple of weeks. For the med of the week this week, I thought I'd go back and look at one of the common medications we see in a patient list quite frequently, and that is some form of a statin. Okay, if you look at the generic name of the drug, and if it ends in the words statin, like simvastatin or atorvastatin or whatever, that is the generic name. Statin is a Lipitor type of drug. It's a cholesterol-lowering medication. So when you see statin at the end of a word, that is an indication that it's going to be there to lower a patient's cholesterol. And so you'll see this in cardiac patients and diabetics, in patients with all kinds of different problems, patients that just have tested with high cholesterol, don't have any other health history. This is all going to be there maybe as a preventative or as an adjunct to other medications and treatments that a patient's receiving, all of that in place. So let's look a little bit about statins and some of the things you might see as a side effect, because there are a couple of things that people need to be aware of with regard to statins, and it's something that you might run into in the field. For the show notes links for statins, I have two different links. I have a link to the Wikipedia article, which is really excellent and well-supported with reference links. So I'm pretty confident in that article. And I also have links over to the National Institutes of Health Medline Drug Information Service. And I'm looking at a specific statin drug, but they all have very similar profiles. So you can go to that Medline link and get a good picture of all the statins by looking at this particular one. But you can also research specifics statins as well. Statins work by lowering the LDL cholesterol. LDL cholesterol is the bad cholesterol. HDL cholesterol is the good cholesterol. And so I always remember that as low. We want to lower the LDL, and L and low, it goes together. So I want to keep the LDL low, and it's okay if the HDL is high. So H high, L low, that's the way you want it to be in the best possible situation. And what the statin drugs do is they help lower the bad cholesterol, and by getting rid of it, by getting it secreted from the body. And these medications are taken by many, many, many people out there, and they are to be coupled with a total lifestyle change. So like so many things we do, they don't work in a vacuum. These types of drugs work best when combined with a low-fat, low-cholesterol diet, and a weight loss program if you're indeed overweight, and exercise, all of which will help reduce the amount of cholesterol. And this is what people need, especially in the United States and other countries that have very high cholesterol diets when compared to the rest of the world. Medication is a tablet and is taken by mouth. And so these patients may have some specific side effects. And these are the things that you want to kind of be aware of when you're looking at these medications. Now, they're going to have the normal run of side effects that seem to happen in all the patients that take every kind of medication, including diarrhea, headache, dizziness, general weakness, and malaise. However, there are some specific things that they may have, including difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep as a result of taking these medications. They also may be more prone to upper respiratory infections. So if a patient's already got a history of getting pneumonia frequently and they're taking a statin drug and they've got a fever, and you might want to be listening to their lungs and making sure they aren't having an onset of another problem. Also, the statin drugs have a serious side effect profile that's very rare, but when it happens, need to be aware of it, and they need to be transported to the emergency room and seen right away. Because what happens is they develop a condition called rhabdomyolysis. Rhabdomyolysis is a condition where the body actually starts to dismantle skeletal muscle, starts to dismantle that large muscle mass in the body. And that rapid amount and infusion of proteins and protein byproducts into the body actually overloads the kidneys and causes acute kidney failure. So This, anytime a patient with taking a statin drug has a sudden onset of muscle pain, tenderness to the muscles, general weakness, and by weakness I mean weakness to the muscle, like they suddenly can't pick things up like they used to be able to, a lack of energy, sudden onset of fever, chest pain, anything that could be muscle injury, you want to go ahead and maybe just mention that. This should be something they check, and when they get to the hospital, they're going to probably get a general chem panel anyway and have their liver function test and their creatinine levels and other things checked. And when they do, they'll probably pick up that there's something else going on. But in the meantime, you need to be aware that that could be something that's going on, and it could be the cause of the signs of kidney failure that you see. And if you want to know more about signs of kidney failure, I covered it back in the fall. Go ahead and search for kidney failure on the Medicast site, like I talked about earlier, and you can find my links to both chronic and acute kidney failure. And I talk about it in two episodes, I believe, of the Medicast just not too long ago. So you want to review what kidney failure looks like, and basically it's going to be fluid accumulation. These are patients that are going to be unable to get rid of fluids efficiently. So, anything that looks like they're holding on to fluid, they're getting puffy, they've got edema, again, it's a total picture, but it's something to be aware of with this particular drug. And so this is something just to kind of keep track of. Of course, any medication can have hypersensitivity effects, so you're always going to be keeping your eyes open for rashes, hives, other signs of anaphylaxis or severe allergic reaction. All of that could happen, especially if they've just recently started taking the statin or if they just switched to a different form of statin drug. Statins are known under many names, but some of the names that you might more likely see include Lipitor, Pravacol, Lescol, Crestor, Zocor, and of course, any medication ending in statin is also one of these drugs, including drugs like Pravastatin, Simvastatin. So when you're reading that medicine bottle in person's home and you're writing that stuff down, this is what a statin drug is. So if you see statin, this is what it does. It reduces cholesterol, and it's generally safe in most cases, but if it's accompanied by muscle pain and signs of renal failure, this is the patient that needs to get to the hospital and get treatment rapidly so that they can have this situation assessed. So that's a look at the med of the week this week, the statins. And that is going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medicast. As always, you can always check over at the Medicast website at www.medicast.com for links to everything I've talked about in the show notes. And if you are signed up for the newsletter, you will get all of this sent to your email box so you can pick up on it immediately when you get your email first thing on Monday morning. And that's a great way to get the Medicast. You always know it's coming. You can go back to your email after you've listened to the show, and you can click on a link and go directly to what you need to find out about. So please, if you're interested, sign up in the newsletter, and you'll go ahead and get that. I don't spam you. I don't send a lot of information out on it. I send out a weekly newsletter with the show notes in it, and occasionally, about once a month or so, something else important comes up, and I'll send you out a quick email about that as well. And you can get all of that over at the Medicast website at medicast.com. If you're interested, you can also check in by email, give me your comments, your suggestions, your questions, and of course, any corrections. I'm not perfect, and this is a community effort. So if you're interested in getting some information to me, maybe I misspoke or said something wrong, you can always check in with me by email at podmedic@mac.com. And you can also call in on the voicemail line at 941-306-3342. If you want to interact with some of the other listeners more directly and with me as well, I would urge you to head over and join the Medicast forums at forums.medicast.com. There's a link in the main page, so you can go ahead and check that out. I just added a new link in the upper right-hand corner near the show notes link, and you can also go ahead and click the link for the forums and join the Medicast forums. It'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions of other Medicast listeners, get a discussion going about different topics, start a topic discussion on your own. Either way, The Medicast Forums is a great way for you to share everything. You can share video, you can share photography there, anything you've got, you can share it at the Medicast Forum. So if you've got good pictures of your new ambulance or pictures of the type of bag you use on your units, you can ask all kinds of questions and share all kinds of information over at forums.medicast.com. I will wrap up, as I always do, with some excellent PodSafe music. This particular song is from a good friend of the show, Matthew Ebel. I've played a lot of Matthew's music before, and I always will continue to play it. I really enjoy his songs. You can find him over at Matthew Ebel, EBEL.com. You can also find him at the PodSafe Music Network. And his songs are available over at the iTunes Store. And I have links to all those places in the show notes for this episode. The song I'll be playing is Lost My Way by Matthew Ebel. I'm going to close out the show and say, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, scene safety, BSI.
Doom, doom. Doom, 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 doom. Doom, 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 doom. Doom, 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 doom. When I woke up hungover again, and I vow right now it's the last time I give in. So to commemorate, I'll go out and tie one on. I guess I'll quit drinking when you're gone. If I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I finally gave up smoking too. At least I thought that's what I told myself I'd do. Then in a cloud of smoke, my car moved to L.A. My girlfriend got towed away. Well, if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, come on, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I'll grab it with both hands. Lord knows I need a change of plans. And if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Then you can't say that I've